It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. From the 3-ounce fluid rule at the airport to warnings about cell phones at gas stations, our next guest says it's time to challenge some of the rules that we follow day after day without question.
In her new book, Playing by the Rules, co-written with Michael Hanlon, our next guest says our obsession with safety rules may be more than a nuisance. It might actually be putting us at greater risk.
Tracy Brown joins us now. She's the director of Sense About Science, a science education charity based in the UK, and she's the co-author of Playing by the Rules. Tracy, welcome to Central Time.
Hello. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, Tracy, it sounds like this book was born out of exasperation for you and for Michael Hanlon. Can you tell us the story of how it got started?
I can. You know, I've been accused of being disruptive and persistent by a lot of organizations now. And it started with leaving my small son at the pool, at the public pool, for a one-to-one lesson with a fully qualified instructor who was also a lifeguard. And I was told that I had to stay for the duration of the lesson. And I couldn't understand why. I thought, if I'm not a great swimmer, if something happens to him, I'd much prefer your lifeguard to be there than me. And it turned out it was for child protection rules and child safety. And I kept pushing and pushing. Well, what's the reason for that? Surely you don't want me to just be sitting there watching your trained swimming pool instructor. And it turned out it was in case he needed to go to the bathroom. And I said, well, you know, he's been at school for 3 years now, and he generally goes to the bathroom on his own. But someone somewhere had dreamt up this rule that it was no longer, having been possible to leave him for this one-to-one lesson, it was no longer possible. And I started to look into this and ask for a bit of evidence about how this rule came about. And I started to do the same thing. There were so many things I began to notice. You know, I couldn't take pictures of my kids in a school tournament because of new rules that were about protecting them from pedophiles. You know, I wasn't allowed to use my phone at the gas station. I wasn't allowed to use my phone in a hospital. I wasn't allowed to use my phone on a plane. And I just started to ask questions, you know, because my day job is asking questions about evidence. And I started to do it in my private life, too. I can tell you my kids were just delighted at the fact that everywhere they went with me, I was asking all these questions. But when my co-author and I got together, we kind of shared the effect of what we'd done, and he'd done similar things because he was a journalist, and we decided actually to go on a bit of a mission. And so Playing by the Rules is all about the story of our adventures as we try to find out, where did this rule come from? Who thought it was a good idea? Where's the evidence? But, you know, along the way, we met other people who had done the same thing. You know, a mom whose kid had been allowed to walk a block to soccer practice, and someone had called 911, and she'd been told it was against the rules. And so we began to kind of pick people up as we went.
And you wanted to be clear in this book that you're not really anti-safety. What are you objecting to, though, about this kind of rule and regulation that we encounter, which is intended, on the face of it, to keep us safe?
That is so important. This is not a book that's against anything like the fantastic improvements in safety. In fact, it protects those from all the stuff that's kind of phony safety. You know, fire exits have been a fantastic thing. Putting the seatbelts on in the car, all things which have been introduced through an overwhelming evidence that they would prove some benefit to us. You know, factory conditions, huge benefits in safety now with all the rules about concerning them. No, this is actually a book that's saying, look, we're going to drown this good stuff in all the rubbish. You know, if you think about the kind of stuff that you, when you get on board a plane, all the information that you're given, you know, we know that the cell phone rule can't be right, you know, because 30% of people leave their cell phones on when they're on a plane. All the studies show we do that. Most of us have done it once or twice. And we know that if that's going on all over the world, by now a plane would have come down somewhere. Right, so we're kind of aware that this isn't right. And in fact, the airlines have now just admitted there really is no need to do this. Some of them have changed their rules and some haven't. You know, you're going to hear about putting on a life vest even though you're flying over the desert. And we start to switch off to this stuff. But what we do is we switch off to the important message, which is if you visualize your way to the exit, you have a much increased chance of getting out of that plane should there be an escapable incident, like the plane overshooting the runway or a fire. And that's a well-proven piece of safety advice, but we drown it with the other stuff and we just stop listening.
What is on your top 10 list of rules that you think really could be doing harm because it's not really doing anything to keep us safer and it's keeping us from hearing the other stuff? What comes to mind first?
Well, I'll take you back to the swimming pool thing. I think that there's another rule related to swimming pools that we talk about in the book, which is a lot of pools, and in many different countries have done this, a lot of pools have introduced rules that stop people from taking more than two children swimming, so one adult to one child ratio. There's all sorts of varieties of this. Some say under four, some say under eight. But what it does is it puts families off going swimming. Now, if particularly you live in an area in the Northern Hemisphere, as teenagers, your children may go out and fall into rivers or jump into the sea off of jetties and this kind of thing. Getting children used to cold water shock, getting them used to the water, learning to swim. So it's not just swimming technique that you learn in a public pool. It's cold water shock and how to deal with it, that breathlessness that you get. And that's the sort of thing that we start to reduce the exposure to risks that we need to learn how to manage. So that really bothers me, what we're doing with not giving children enough exposure to manage them, for them to manage risks. The other stuff I find quite frustrating too, I mean, it just seems to me really frustrating that every time I go through the airport, I have to pull this stuff out and throw it away. And there's always something that I didn't think of, you know, a snow globe or a lightsaber was the other one.
The water bottle.
The water bottle that you always forget and leave in your bag, and then you're made to feel like you're helping Al-Qaeda because you did that. So that frustrates me a lot as well.
We're talking with Tracy Brown right now. She's the author of a new book called Playing by the Rules. She says our obsession with safety is putting us actually at greater risk. And to look at some more of these in a little closer focus here, what about the gas station sign, which we sometimes see, saying don't use your cell phone while you're pumping gasoline? I guess the idea here being there could be a spark and you've got gas, flammable liquid, you get an explosion. What about that one?
Well, I have to admit on this one, Victoria, I was taken by surprise. I really did believe there must be something to this. I'm kind of embarrassed to say that having a background working in science, I actually thought there must be something mechanical that would make this possible. So I was really surprised to find that no matter how hard you try, you cannot ignite gasoline with your cell phone. It's just not possible to do. And where we track this back to was there, you'll be aware that there's a risk of fire from static electrical charges. You know, when you get in the car after you've put the fuel nozzle in, you get out and then you discharge yourself when you touch that fuel.
Right, and that one's founded, isn't it? There have
that
actually been a few of those.
There's been more than a few of those. It is well founded. What happened was that when cell phones started to be carried by more and more people, of course, when those fires occurred amid the wreckage, you'd find a cell phone. So people began to wonder whether there was a connection with the cell phone. And it just became a rumor. It just became, in fact, what happened was people started to post up pictures, and now even video, of gas stations that have gone up because they've gone up in flames because of the static discharge. And they've actually said this is because of cell phones. And they've just put those on, in a warning, put those on Facebook. And we found that some of the gas companies, the companies selling the gas, actually started to take those seriously. So we found that actually the origin of their warnings was they'd seen something on the internet.
So you've pushed back on these sorts of rules and warnings, you know, sometimes to the embarrassment of your kids, but how does it generally go over? Is there a way to do it effectively?
There is, and perhaps the best time to do that is not when your family's passports are being held in the hand of somebody at the airport as you wait to take your annual vacation. I think it's important that all of us do it once in a while. That's what I'm saying in the book. You know, I mean, I do a lot of this. The thing that you do is sometimes, you know, you're not going to just make a phone call and have somebody say, do you know what, there's no evidence here. Although we have got some great stories in the book where something not dissimilar to that has happened. But what you also do is you just remind everybody, you remind our rule makers, we remind those, you know, local politicians who speak up whenever there's a one-off incident and they say something must be done. Remind them that we're expecting them to have some evidence behind what they do. And because at the moment we're in a situation where if you've got the label safety or security on any warning or rule or guideline, people assume that no one's going to ask any questions. You know, we're made to feel stupid for asking those questions. Are you a friend to pedophiles? Are you a friend to terrorists? You know, why are you asking these questions? And we need to turn that around and say, no, if you want to change my life, you need to tell me what is the nature of the risk we're dealing with here. How are you sure that what you're telling me, is, you know, what you're proposing is going to sort that out? And what other kind of effects might it have?
We're talking with Tracy Brown right now. She's the director of Sense About Science, a science education charity in the UK, and the co-author of the book we're talking about. It's called Playing by the Rules. And she's making the case that our obsession with safety and rules is actually putting us at risk.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think our society is too rule-obsessed, too safety-obsessed, sometimes without the data to back it up? Have you come across nonsense rules that you thought, why is that? Why do I have to do this? Why can't I do that? Or do you think, you know, we're right, safety first, and we should put warnings wherever a warning might be needed? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Tracy Brown right now. She's the director of Sense About Science, a science education charity in the UK, and she's co-author of the book Playing by the Rules. She says our obsession with safety and rules is putting us more at risk.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. You heard Tracy talking about some of those little safety rules and regulations that you might encounter in your daily life. You might just take for granted until you think about them. Are there rules like that in your life that you wonder why is that there, that bug you, that maybe make you think it's a bit of over-caution? Or do you think we mostly get it right when we post warnings, rules, labels like that? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Tracy, one thing you look at, going back to the airlines and the rules there, because there are a lot of them, is one airline that does security really well, the Israeli airline El Al, and you compare and contrast a little. What do they do right that the rest of the airlines could learn from?
Well, this is a really interesting thing, is that obviously they face a much different situation in terms of the threat of terror attacks, and they're so much more relaxed. They're not interested in bottles of water. And I think they're just really looking for certain individuals that they've had intelligence about. And that's a really crucial point, in fact, because when we put all these bipping and bonging machines in our airports, they cost millions. I mean, all across America, the airports now, you probably had this done yourself. When we go through, we get randomly selected and our hands get swabbed or our suitcase gets swabbed.
I just had that happen, yes.
Yeah, so they put it in a machine, and you think, wow, this is, you know, it's going to look for some detection of explosives there. We were really shocked to find, and I'm telling you, these cost millions, these machines. We were shocked to find that not once has any explosive ever been detected by one of them, not just in America, but across the world. Not once. Hmm. And these have been rolled out now for more than 10 years. Where gains get made on terrorism risk is in intelligence. So if you were to take those same resources that are spent on all these beeping and bonging machines and spend them on intelligence, you know, on the intelligence services, which is how we have discovered, we discovered the printer bombs that were sent from Yemen to the United States, they were discovered through intelligence, investment intelligence. So it's not on people, you know, from people who are on $12 an hour going checking your luggage through the scanner. That is not how we discover those things. And so I think there's a real worry here that we're putting our resources in the wrong place.
Do you think that some of those rules, I mean, particularly if you look at airline regulations, those are put in place to calm the people who are in line, who've heard about things like the shoe bomber who was thwarted and other dangerous things happening on planes, and they want to see that security is out there putting people through the paces. And so maybe it's more of a response to fear?
That's an interesting question. And I think that it's often an argument that people go to, you know, when you question them about the rules and they haven't got the evidence, they say, oh, well, it's because people want it. And in fact, actually, various people in the TSA and others that we've spoken to in writing the book have said that it's because it makes people feel better. But I don't know how true that is. I've been looking around to see if this has been studied, and it hasn't yet. But after spending 2 hours sometimes waiting in line, looking at your fellow passengers with suspicion, taking off your belt, your shoes, going through the scanner, you know, putting your computer into the tray, making sure it's fully charged before you even get to the airport, getting that water out, shampoo bottle, you know, are you really getting more, feeling more secure about this? Or are you just thinking about the risk of being bombed out of the sky? I mean, that's what I thought about for 2 hours. By the time I sit on that plane, it's all I've had to think about. And I think I suspect that it isn't making us less anxious. It isn't reassuring us, and it shouldn't be reassuring us. It's dangerous. In fact, the example I used there was the bombs that came from Yemen. They were in printer cartridges. And it's worth noticing that the intelligence came through. This was in East Midlands Airport in the UK, where they were stopping on their way to the United States. And what happened was police closed the airport. They scanned those printers. They scanned those cases. They found nothing. The sniffer dog sniffed it. They put stuff through their detector's explosive machine, the explosive detection machine. They x-rayed it. And they were so sure that there was nothing there that they reopened the airport before they dispatched these things, which then turned out to have had bombs in them. Now, there's a false reassurance danger here, isn't there? That if we think that we're doing something when we're not, we're actually not dealing with risks that do need to be dealt with.
We're talking about our obsession with rules right now with Tracy Brown. She's the author of the book Playing by the Rules. And we go to our first caller now. We've got Kurt joining us in Green Bay. Kurt, hi.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I just wanted to comment. I think it's a great program. It's my comment had to do with pre-surgical timeouts in the operating room, where about 10 years ago, the timeout protocols were implemented to try to prevent wrong patient or wrong site surgeries, for example, working on the wrong heat or something like that. And it was initially very simple, where everyone in the room would indicate, okay, we have the correct patient, we're doing the proper surgery, just take a timeout, make sure you're doing the right thing, and then proceed. And a couple of years ago, there was a push to implement the World Health Organization timeout, which was much, much more in-depth, where you had to go over patient allergies, and there's some merit to that. But then you also had to go around the room, everyone had to introduce themselves, their role in the surgery, what they were doing that day. These are people you work with day in, day out, year after year. And after a few times of doing that, there was this, pretty much everyone realizes, look, the important pieces of information are getting buried here. There's too much information. Nobody's listening to any of it anymore.
Do you think that was making things maybe less safe in a way or less thorough because there was too much information?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's a lot of merit to the pre-surgical timeout. I think the intent was correct, which is to try to be as thorough as possible. But right after a point, just too much information, everybody tunes out, then you're essentially doing nothing.
Kurt, thanks a lot for that comment. Appreciate that. And Tracy, what about that specific example, and have you looked at the medical system, hospitals?
Well, that's a really great example, actually. And I hadn't come across that particular one about background noise, where you drown things. I mean, I think that's just such a clear example where we lose a real safety gain by calling, by imposing too much more around it. Another example of a similar thing is pregnant women. Pregnant women are absolutely bombarded with information about what they must do and mustn't do. And, you know, in amongst these hundreds of things that you mustn't eat and you mustn't, you know, go to the pool because you might inhale the chemicals and all these things, most of which are not founded on any evidence at all, you've got some serious things, which is to take folic acid, hugely improves the outcome in your pregnancy, and to spot the signs of preeclampsia, which is very bad for mother and baby and fairly common. But those things are messages we must get across to pregnant women. But if it's one message in 300, how can we be sure it's coming across?
And Tracy, just very briefly, before we let you go, take us through one more example. I know you like raw hamburgers, but there are a lot of concerns. Even Wisconsin, raw milk is a concern. You compare that with Japan. What do you see as being the real way to be safe here?
Well, that's really interesting. food, we looked a little bit at the food regulations that exist and which ones work. And what we found was that actually it's professionalism that improves our chances of not being poisoned by food. So it's people's professional pride. It's not the rules. We were very surprised to find that the US is one of the highest rulemakers in the area of food. Japan is one of the lowest. And yet the incidence of foodborne disease is absolutely the opposite way around. Japan's got one of the lowest incidence in the world, despite eating a lot of raw food. The US has got one of the highest. So it showed that we began to see this relationship that the rules almost seem to signify where you have, you know, where you have lack of responsibility then being taken by the people that are implementing them.
Tracy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Tracy Brown, director of Sense About Science, based in the UK. She's the author of the book Playing by the Rules.